Okay, firstly, I mean, I'd like to underline that the mandate doesn't fundamentally tamper with our existing mandate, and it leaves intact the four core elements or pillars which are always been allocated to the mission: protection of civilians, creating conditions conducive for the delivery of humanitarian aid, monitoring and reporting on human rights, and supporting the peace process. And you will be aware that previously the Security Council has encouraged us to develop a three-year vision based on a sense of the mission of the priorities of the mission. And in that regard, I've really put a premium on what I call making peace irreversible. In other words, to facilitate the passage of South Sudan through its transition creates the best and most optimal conditions, if the country stabilizes as a result, for the protection of civilians, the delivery of aid, the establishment of development projects, and for, of course, the political development of the country. So we have always placed a premium in that sense on mitigating conflict and building peace. And the new mandate accepts all of that. If there is a notable addition to the mandate, it's the recognition that we should play a supportive role in creating the conditions for the elections. In other words, to support the South Sudanese in preparing for elections. So that's where our mandate, it doesn't deal very specifically with some of the more immediate challenges we face. I mean, if I had to identify those challenges, I would certainly underline the surge in what is alternatively called subnational violence, intercommunal violence, cross-border violence, from north to south and from east to west. And in that regard, we will continue to try and do our work to the greatest impact that we can have, which is to use our peacekeepers to create an umbrella of peace where there are hotspots, to use our civil affairs to create dialogues around the accommodation and peaceful arrangements, or the arrangements to promote peace between neighboring communities, to put a focus on mobility. We need our peacekeepers to be able to operate throughout the year, not just the dry months. And we are encouraging our peacekeepers to do that. In my discussions with the member states in New York, I think there's by and large an acceptance of that broad package of challenges and the way in which we're responding. But I can share with you there's an enduring concern about gender-based violence and what we are doing to mitigate that. And that is reflected in the mandate as well.
Yeah, in a follow-up of this area of subnational violence, where do you think the mission can have an impact? Because this seems to be out of the peace agreement deal, and it's something else not related to political issues.
Well, we've treated it as really a feature, manifestation, a phenomenon which comes from the general state of the country. And although the conflict is not presenting itself as the opposition versus the government, it's presenting itself in this form of this violence. It is extensive and very damaging to communities. And we see the bigger purpose in helping the country complete its transition and hold democratic elections as incompatible with the levels of violence we see. And therefore, it's a very central part, at least we see it as a very central part of our mandate to try.
And also, the mandate has been renewed under really serious climatic conditions.
Yeah.
And what is the effect of this?
Well, I think the mandate doesn't dwell on it, but it certainly reflects a concern with the humanitarian crisis that the country is facing. I think that crisis has deepened considerably over the past year, partly as a result of the floods, which have affected several of the states, have affected the land available for cultivation, has prevented people from sowing and harvesting crops, has affected animal herds. So we can only expect 2022 to be worse. Not only that, but because with the spread of the of the subnational violence, it also means displaced people have not had the opportunity to sow and harvest. So the amount of food which was produced by communities themselves will have diminished. That will mean there will be a need for increased aid from the donors. And there again, as I mentioned in my press conference this morning, we face a challenge because there are other crises that the donors are now that holds their attention, not least the war in Ukraine and the effects and legacy of that war, but also just simply in the region. What is happening in Ethiopia, what is happening in Sudan, has really pushed South Sudan off the table as an area of concern. I have been traveling to say to the international community, don't neglect South Sudan. We're in the middle of a very fragile and conflict-scarred region, being the Horn of Africa. There is conflict literally east and west, north and south. Please stay engaged, because if there's a collapse or a setback in South Sudan, it will affect the rest of the region.
Yeah. As Harusji, also, the implementation of the peace agreement is happening with a remarkable or a shrinking of civic space. And you mentioned it several times. And also in another dimension, the 35% representation of women is still being really not fulfilled. What are the implications here for the mandate you are trying to implement?
Well, the mandate clearly recognizes the importance of the participation of women, both in leadership and in peacemaking, and in, of course, guaranteeing their safety. And I think that is correct. What we know, even from academic studies, is that the high participation of women in peace processes and in governance leads to a reduction in violence. So we think that's correct. We're also aware that the peace agreement is making slow progress. The capacity of the parties to attend to the various elements of the peace agreement is important. And the peace agreement itself sets targets. And so there's no real excuse for the failure not to make those targets. Those targets were agreed to by the parties. So all we're doing is asking them to meet the commitments they've made.
Yeah. And a question about the rule of law as related to the mandate of the mission. And perhaps you can link it with issues of reporting violations, human rights reports, and renewal of the Human Rights Commission on South Sudan.
Yeah. Well, an issue which I didn't mention but formed a central part of my brief to the Security Council, if I can just mention it, was the need to make more rapid progress on the implementation of the peace agreement. We see that as very central to our mandate and to the achievement of stability in the country. So in all of my engagements with South Sudanese leadership, I have stressed the need to make the compromises necessary for there to be progress in the peace agreement. And I sense amongst ordinary people levels of frustration or despondency when the process seems to go backwards. And when it goes forwards, you can see the sense of hope it engenders. So that remains an important issue, and it remains an important issue because, you know, the elections are only several months away. If they're to be held in December, which is what is contemplated in the peace agreement, then there's a mountain of work to be done by then. On the question of the rule of law, we have been concerned to build up what we call the justice chain. There has to be adequate policing, investigation, proper prosecution, courts established, and prisons where people who are convicted can go. And in many parts of the country, those facilities are simply not functioning or not present. And we're aware that if we want to make a, if we want to break the cycles of violence, which we see evident in some of the worst of the conflict-ridden areas, then we need to provide the institutions by which people can deal with the causes of violence. And that essentially is greater levels of accountability and consequences for actions taken by people who cause death and destruction.
Yeah. And last year, UNMISS was tasked with advancing a three-year peace-building strategy. And where is it now? Does it stand still?
No, it's still very much in play. And quite frankly, it's probably the dominant theme which informs almost all of our work, to make peace irreversible, to ground peace generally, to promote stability in the country. And, you know, most importantly, to provide a sense of safety to ordinary people who've now almost become used to high levels of violence and insecurity. We think that's an important element of creating the atmosphere within which politics can take its normal course.
Yeah. UNMISS has been here for like more than 10 years now, and the mandate has been renewed every time. Every time there are new challenges, the mission is facing new dimensions and dynamics taking place. What are some of the challenges that you are seeing ahead as you are trying to implement all these multidimensional aspects of the mandate that you are implementing? You have mentioned some, but from your own perspective, you are also not new to the country. And you might have seen new developments that are constituting challenges.
Well, I think we need to face the challenge of this intercommunal violence spreading across the country, the surge. That requires additional effort, more focused effort by those of our structures which engage in promoting dialogue between communities in conflict with each other. Last year, we had 170 conflict resolution exercises, which generated 34 peace agreements. That's quite a significant contribution. But we're also aware that in the context of South Sudan, many of those peace agreements simply don't last. So we've recognized the need really to up our game, both in the peacekeeping part of our mandate, that is to make sure that our peacekeepers leave their compounds and travel freely, that they are more mobile and can convert themselves into a force which is operative for 12 months of the year, not 6 months of the year, and then held hostage by mud for the next 6 months. So we've seen the challenge of creating agility and mobility amongst our peacekeepers, more concerted action by our peacemakers. And we're beginning to recognize as well that we need to promote the humanitarian and development aspects of the mission's work, that development is a necessary, access to livelihoods is critical and necessary. You know, we have seen throughout the country the awful conditions under which humanitarians work. You know, they face real danger, but they're facing increasingly a hostility from youth groups. And those youth groups, that hostility is itself a reflection of the economic and political marginalization of the youth, and the fact that for many of them, the deep frustration of not having access to livelihoods. And without a culture of holding government to account, they tend to take out that anger on the humanitarians who access the areas in which they live. If I look at the challenges, I would also need to mention once again the pressure we face to raise funds from the donors to meet the food insecurity challenges and the flood damage, and generally to provide medicines and schooling and food to people across the country at a time in which donors are under more pressure than at any time because of their outlay or demands flowing from the COVID-19 pandemic, from the need to deal with humanitarian crises elsewhere. And I'm often quite surprised that people tend to treat South Sudan as an area of stability and tranquility because the areas around it are so troubled. But what we have to do is to persuade the international community and the donors in particular to stay the course with South Sudan.
Yeah. You might be aware of this debate going on about the health pool fund that is being shrinking. Are you aware of that, or what do you think, because you are in charge of the whole humanitarian NGOs in the country at the moment? Is it among your discussions?
It is. It's particularly the responsibility of my deputy and humanitarian coordinator, Sara Inyanti. But it's a significant part of our work is to ensure that the focus and attention of the international community stays on South Sudan. You know, their attention can move quite easily.
So
that will continue to be one of our preoccupations.
For the listeners of Radio Miraya who sometimes get you through press conferences, what is your message to them during this time we are approaching Easter?
Well, we must keep faith with the promise of the future and the intent of the peace agreement. Steady progress on the peace agreement is going to lead to an early normalization, stabilization of the country, and at the end of the day, the creation of jobs and livelihoods for people.